Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Anthony Jellier. I have the honor of representing Michael Richardson. About a year ago, I stood before this Court in United States v. Scott, and I received an opinion that said if a district court can deviate from the guidelines based on its disagreement with a policy, it is equally within its authority to adhere to the guidelines because it concurs with the policy judgment the guidelines reflect. But just as we now know that the earth is not flat, we also know that crack is not 100 times more harmful than powder cocaine. And it's a sign of progress that this time when I was in front of the sentencing court, the judge did at least discuss briefly Mr. Richardson's argument regarding the disparity. She noted that if it had been a powder case, he'd be looking at 37 to 46 months. And she also said that such a discrepancy would be warrant consideration, but for the fact that he has a terrible criminal history, and it seems to be accelerating over the last year.
So why wasn't – I actually have 2 points to make about your argument. One of them is that the Supreme Court in Kimbrough did not go as far as you are asking us to go, and I have some concern about getting that far in front of them. And secondly, you are critical of the district court for making the comment that you just alluded to, for saying, you know, maybe I'd be more worried about this disparity, but for the fact that you've got this long criminal history. But by the time she's been advised by a properly calculated advisory guideline range, she's supposed to move over to 3553A and look at the particular characteristics of the defendant, which certainly includes his criminal record. And so it seems to me that's precisely the discretion that we now understand district judges to have. So how can that be an error on her part?
I'm not sure that that would be an error on her part, but for the fact that if we start with the guidelines and we say, okay, this is going to be the guidelines range, well, then if we're going to do something different, I think that it's important to use the guidelines. For example, in this case, had she started off with the powder range, to get to where she ended up on that sentence, she would have had to raise his level 12 times. And the guidelines have a section that says if the criminal history underrepresents them, move it over within from category 2 to, say, 6. If that's
that
enough,
was all for calculating guidelines. I mean, I know the part of the guidelines you're talking about, but back in the old days, as it were, the pre-Booker world, that's the way district judges had to get to a guideline range that made sense. Now, they don't have to go through all of that. They can say, here's the guideline range, but now what about you? And they look at the 3553A factors, and they can pick a sentence that seems reasonable. I mean, sentencing is not a science, as you know.
I understand that, Judge. I agree with you. But I think that as long as we're going to use the advisory guidelines as a starting point, there's a really great case from this circuit, United States v. Bartlett, that's 567 F3rd 901. And it says judges do not need to use the guidelines as the fulcrum of analysis, but the court still needs to understand the relation between the guidelines and the ultimate sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
right,
that
we did get a guideline sentence in this case, though, right?
Well, we got a guideline sentence based on a crack ratio.
But those are the guidelines, right?
Right. But then what we would be doing is saying, well, these are presumptively reasonable guidelines, even though we all know that crack cocaine guidelines have been repudiated by their authors. Each and every one of them has repudiated. So to say that we should be able to presume that this is a good guideline.
And there's a process for changing them. And it was changed, the guideline was changed about 2.5 years ago, and no further changes have been made.
That is correct.
I mean, we don't let people out because individual jurors come back and say, I've changed my mind, right?
I'm not sure I'm
It's a stretch of an analogy. Don't worry about it.
But the problem that I mean, essentially, and I don't think that you're apologizing for this, good for you, is you think we really should just wholesale throw out the crack guidelines because study has now shown them to be ill-based. And there are so many processes going on. Congress is looking at these things. The Department of Justice is looking at them. the Sentencing Commission is looking at them. And the most the Supreme Court has been willing to say to us is district courts are entitled, although not required, to have a general policy disagreement with them. And in that posture, it seems to me very difficult to find the authority for a court of appeals just to say, well, in the Seventh Circuit, there are no more crack guidelines.
Well, I agree, but I think that the Seventh Circuit should say to judges, we need you to make a definitive statement about what they're worth. You know, maybe you think it's worth two offense levels because they did something additional to make it crack, or maybe you think it's a 20-to-1 ratio, but you just can't say, well, I'm going to work off that guideline because that guideline is not legitimate. Now,
so you're just saying the district court needs to have some clarity. The district court needs to be pretty clear as to whether or not the court is starting with the powder calculation. The powder calculation. And you're saying her real error was not really making it clear, right?
Right?
She made some mention of, she made reference to it, but she didn't say how she got from that to the ultimate sentence other than the criminal history.
Actually, my understanding of what she said was, well, you're such a bad person generally that I'm just not going to worry about it because that's what the guidelines are in your case. And
would that be okay?
I don't believe that it is, Your Honor, because, you know,
she thinks he's incorrigible.
And that may be, but had she said to him, you know what, you're incorrigible, so I'm going to give you this sentence, I'm going to, you know, give you 10 extra years over what the powder would have been just because of the violence that you've shown in the past, at least he would know that that was a fair sentence, because basically he's just another one of a long line of young black kids from Chicago that I've represented that got another crack sentence. Mm-hmm. And he's going to spend years and years in prison. My brief, I think, lists 11 mm-hmm. different bills in Congress.
Right.
His case probably won't be open when those bills are passed. He'll lose literally a half a decade, a good part of a decade of his life, unless this court says to the judges beneath it, we need you to give us a reasoned starting place. Give us how you got to that final sentence. If you think he's a bad person and you're going to do a nine-guideline sentence, say it, because he will know what he got a sentence for other than being a young black kid from Chicago and Madison, Wisconsin, and that's virtually all I represent when I come here. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ms. Altman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the United States in this case. In this case, more than many others that we see, the defendant does know why he got the sentence in this case. The Court went through 3553A factors extensively. She went through his history. She went through pending cases. She talked about him beating people and beating his girlfriend and the amounts of drugs sold. And she... I think there's probably 4 or 5 pages of the transcript that tell him why he got the sentence he did.
But what she doesn't quite say as clearly as one might imagine in this, maybe this will turn out to be a transitional time, maybe not, I of course don't know. But she doesn't say, I actually have a choice of beginning my thinking from the amount that the powder guidelines would recommend as a sentence, or beginning my thinking with the level of sentencing that would be recommended by the crack guidelines, and I've decided to use the crack guidelines because X. You know, we don't quite have that sentence from her, and I guess if the advisory guidelines are to mean anything, then you at least need to understand where they fit into someone's thinking.
We don't have that exact sentence, but we do have her saying, I recognize there's a disparity. The discussion was there about what it would be were it powder versus crack, and she said, look, your history, I think she said, but for the defendant's criminal history, which appeared to have been accelerating in the past year, I would take that more into consideration. So we do know that, while perhaps not said, she is explicitly starting from the crack guidelines. For the reasons that she said. She did indicate, I'm not taking the disparity into consideration.
Ms. Altman, do you agree that it would have been a legal error for the judge to have started with the powder guidelines in this case?
I think without a sentence acknowledging that they were, I think she could say, I acknowledge that the crack guidelines put this guideline range at 151 to 180 months. Mm-hmm. Based on current law of this country, I am free to go below that, and so I am using the powder guidelines. I think she could do that.
She has to do the first calculation, correct?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then she can
move off of that if she's persuaded she should do so for a good reason.
Exactly. And in this case, she simply wasn't persuaded.
And she can even do it, according to Kimbrough and Spears, if she says, my first calculation assumes that the proper ratio is 100 to 1, but I think that's a bad ratio, and I'm going to change to, could she say I'm going to change to 1 to 1?
She could.
Sure, she could. That's exactly what Kimbrough says, or 20 to 1 or whatever she wanted.
Absolutely. But she can also say this is the ratio, and I, for these reasons in 3553A, I think this sentence here is appropriate. She doesn't even have to address ratios. She can put the sentence anywhere she wants, provided that she has properly considered the 3553A factors, which she did. She could have made it higher had she wanted to, provided that she had specifically considered the 3553A factors and had made a record accordingly.
And so you don't think even in light of all the evidence and the bills that are pending, she had to even address the ratio?
I don't think she had to, no. I think what the court is required to do, and it's exactly what the judge did in this case, she is required to consult a correctly calculated guideline range, which she did. She is then required to carefully examine the 3553A factors, which she did extensively. And then she's required to impose a sentence that's sufficient but not greater than necessary on the defendant, and to carefully explain her reasons. And she did all of that. And I think that this sentence is reasonable, and she did everything the way she should, and it should be affirmed. Does the court have any further questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Tellier?
So I believe that Bartlett is a good idea. I think that it's an idea that this court should teach the lower courts. This is a case where there was a 408% increase in the minimum advisory sentence. And U.S. v. Dean says explicit fact-finding is required if contested facts are material to a judge's sentencing decision. Now, granted, I know that that was talking about the individual characteristics of the offender. But I think that this guy, if in particular, is one where we should be able to make the same request that the judge make an explicit fact-finding about what the ratio might be. Thank you.
So let me ask you this. If she had said that she was just going to, if she had said she was going to just half it, she looked at the fact that she could use the powder guideline, and she looked at the fact that she could use a crack guideline, and she said she just wanted to half that amount, would you think that would be appropriate? She'd say, I'm going to go in the middle of that amount, and I'm going to look at, you know, his criminal history as well. Would that have been fine with you?
Yes, because that would show that she actually made a decision about it rather than defaulted to the old guideline, which is what it appears to the defendants in all of these cases. Thank you.
All right, thank you. You were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
We appreciate your service to your client and to the court. And thank you as well to the U.S. Attorney's Office.